The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
He is a colonel in the Colorado Army National Guard.
Duty, honor, country.
And district attorney for Colorado's 18th Judicial District.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Most important, he's a father and a proud American.
Americans love a winner.
He is George Brockler. And this is The George Show on News Talk 710 KNUS.
I'm brought to you courtesy of the red, white.
Everything that guy just says,
I feel like we should redo the intro to lead with the clip from My Cousin Vinny just to set everybody's expectations appropriately. This is George Brockler. You are an hour two of week 11 of The George Show here on 710 KNUS. Now, listen, the discussion that we're about to have is an important one to me as a father of four public school students. Ages 10, 12, 15, and 17. I'm everywhere in the public school system, from grade school up through high school. And so what is impacting them the most, obviously, right now is the inability to go to school and get that face-to-face education time. I know the schools are doing the best that they can. We're going to hear from a teacher after this. But I wanted to get a different perspective. And mercifully, there is a study that has recently come out, a report that has recently come out by an expert in the area and someone who's part of an organization. If you don't know it, you should get to know it. It's the Common Sense Policy Roundtable. It is a nonpartisan, just in-your-face, candid, factual look at issues that impact Colorado, its economy, and in this case, the education. It's not Republican. It's not Democrat. It's just the facts. And you can find them at commonsensepolicyroundtable.org. Right now, I am fortunate to be joined on the phone. And I'm going to mispronounce your last name, doctor, so you're going to have to pronounce it for me. But I'm going to say it's Dr. Brenda Bouch?
Hi, yes, Dr. Brenda DeConer. Yes, Brenda Bouch DeConer.
Bouch DeConer. So I was even missing a word. I never had a chance to get it all right. Thank you, doctor, for joining us early on a Saturday when otherwise I imagine you would be looking to get up in the next couple few hours.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, listen, this report that you've done, first off, before people that are listening to 710 KNUS are going to be like, oh, yeah, I want to know what Dr. Brenda's saying. Give us a little bit about your background. First off, did you grow up here in Colorado?
I sure did, yes. I grew up in South Denver. I went to Cherry Creek High School.
I've heard of Cherry Creek High School. It's a small school, maybe 1A, 2A sports, that kind of thing.
That's right. Yeah, not a big deal.
It's not too far from my office. That is a big deal. And then you went and got a whole mess of education about education, and including a PhD from University of Colorado.
Yes, University of Colorado, Denver, their School of Public Affairs.
Now, tell us, when you started the process of looking into this issue that you generated this report on, what is it you were trying to answer? What were the questions?
Well, we were trying to think about what is going to be the actual amount of learning loss, and then we thought it's not really possible to know that quite yet, but what are experts projecting, and what can we tell from the data that we have in past years, particularly around summer learning loss? So, you know, those kind of the little bit of English and math that kids forget when they are on summer break and they come back in the fall. So we have data around that. And so we have some other research organizations have kind of modeled that out to try to think about what the impact's going to be from the COVID closures.
Now, set the stage for us, if you will, and tell us what has happened. I mean, since the governor's order of, I think it's March 25th now, what has happened statewide with education? I know from my kids' perspective, but I don't know what's going on in the next community over.
Sure, yeah. I mean, statewide, all schools have been required to close for the remainder of the school year, their school buildings. And so you have districts who are implementing remote learning with a just wide variation of approach. There was a poll conducted by Ready Colorado, which is an education nonprofit here in Denver, and they found that 35% of parents have reported that their kids haven't participated in any remote learning whatsoever.
Over a third of the kids that are in homes haven't participated in any remote learning since this shutdown?
Since they shut down, that's correct.
Oh, my God, that's crazy. So you talked about the short-term education loss over the summer, and I get that. I mean, that happens with everybody, including my kids. This is a little different, though. Let's exclude that 35% that Ready Colorado, which I think is a Luke Ragland organization. He's fantastic, that we set that to the side. For the other 65%, it's not quite like summer because there is some education going on. Have you been able to sort of estimate, look, what does this look like for them moving forward? Like if we go back into the classrooms in August, are we going to have to spend a considerable amount of time kind of relearning what we should have learned at the end of this year?
Yes. So there's a one of the assessment organizations where schools use these assessments to do diagnostic testing on kids. So they have lots of years of data, and they've projected that in reading, students are going to maybe remember about 70% of what they're supposed to. So they're going to lose about 30% of their learning gains. And in math, they're projecting that that could actually be anywhere from 50% to 100%. You could have kids
100%?
Coming back a full year behind in math. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Math is a much harder skill to retain without consistent practice and repetition. And we could see kids being really behind in math.
Now, you had also talked about in this study about the impact long term on elementary age students who miss out on certain percentages of days of instruction and all this other stuff. One, are we there yet? And two, what does that mean? What are the long-term implications?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we should be concerned about the elementary-aged kids. They're losing momentum on these critical literacy and numeric benchmarks. They're not getting the socialization or that kind of classroom behavior skill set that they're supposed to be learning right now. So our kindergartners in particular need a lot of attention. We're going to have first grade teachers who are basically going to have a class of kindergartners, but they're going to have to teach to first grade standards. So schools need to be ready to think about that and to train their teachers to adapt to that. And, you know, we know from past research on teacher strikes that elementary kids who missed out on 2-3 months of school actually saw lower wages as adults. So you had were they behind academically, but it just built and built, and they actually lost their economic productivity was lower.
And we're talking to Dr. Brenna DeConer out at the Common Sense Policy Roundtable. When you talk about what needs to be done next year, in order to do that, there's going to have to be, as you'd mentioned before, some identifying of learning gaps and testing and all this other thing. Is that also going to take away from the instructional time as well, as we just simply try to gauge how deep is this educational hole we've created?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we're going to have to, you know, schools are at the beginning of the school year, are going to have to assess kids to figure out where they are, to see how big the gaps are. And then they're going to have to figure out how to radically remediate these students to get them back on track and to also teach next year's, you know, content as well. I mean, there might be some kids that are going to have to repeat a school year, but I think for the vast majority of kids, it's going to be this game of playing catch up and teaching new stuff all in one school year.
Now, is there a recommendation you have about the length of the school day or length of the school year? And I ask this in the context not only of the hole we have to dig ourselves out of, but in the fact that, you know, Governor Gavin Newsom, who's just a few states over, part of that state that some in our state want to grow up to be like California, they've said, hey, we're considering going back into the classrooms in July. We need to start the school year earlier. What are your thoughts on those things?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of people calling for increased summer school this summer. I think that's going to be really hard to do just given the current realities right now and that things aren't opening up super fast. I think that's great if that's possible. I think what would be maybe more doable is to just focus on what we can do next year and expanding instruction time, whether that's longer school days, skipping school breaks, thinking about extending the school year next year. And even those conversations, I'm not hearing those right now. And I think that's concerning because we need to be planning for that at the very minimum, about how we can increase instructional time next year.
Now, listen, you've said some things out loud that cause some parents to just drop the F-bomb in their cars or at home. And that is, we're going to get rid of the school breaks. And I have to say, I get it. Like, we have more breaks now, in my opinion, than we ever did when I was in high school. Now, I realize I went to high school during a time when everything was lit by candles. But the idea of a fall break and a spring break and this extended winter break, and by the way, and I'm not knocking teachers for wanting these things, but the number of seemingly endless four-day weekends that we have where we build in a Friday that's instructional time or learn to teach time on the front end of a three-day weekend, I've never seen it. It feels like to me more time off than my kids have had right now in school. Are you suggesting that at least in the short term, and this makes some sense to me, maybe we carve back some of that? Maybe we figure out a way to get the kids more FaceTime with the teacher so that they can get caught up?
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, it's going to cost, that's a huge lift, right, for parents and for the system that has to fund that, has to deal with union contracts. But, I mean, I think we got to put the kids first at this point in time and really think about how do we get them back on track. Otherwise, we're not going to catch these kids up, and they're going to fall further and further behind, and that's going to have huge implications for our, you know, our economy down the road.
What about, like, weekend school?
Mm-hmm. I think for targeted, you know, and you see this in Asian countries where they provide targeted Saturday instruction for kids who do need to remediate, or, you know, some who actually are trying to accelerate as well. But I definitely think that's a strategy that should be on the table.
Talk to me about this part of the report that emphasizes for policymakers competency-based education. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so competency-based education is where credits are awarded based on a demonstrated mastery of knowledge and skills rather than just seat time. So if a student's able to master, let's say, all of algebra, let's say they can complete the algebra course and all the units of algebra within 6 weeks instead of a, you know, 4 to 5 month semester, they would be able to move on at that point. They'd get the credit and then they'd move on to the next, the algebra two. It's a lot easier to implement at that kind of high school level, although there are K-12 models of it as well. But I think it's something that could be considered when we right now need to think about moving kids at different paces. So some kids are just going to have to, you know, do two grade levels in one school year, basically.
You know, that's it's so interesting that you say that, because you're talking about something that I think parents would respond well to, and that is the idea of a more individualized approach to education than we see right now. And again, this isn't a knock on the educational system, it's just the reality of it. But you got 25 to 35 kids in a classroom. In some ways, you have to teach to the lowest common denominator, or at least that lower half, in order to make sure everybody progresses. What you're suggesting is, look, in light of the fact that we have these varying deficits that we can't measure right now, but we're going to try to through testing, maybe we really encourage schools to look at an opportunity here to advance kids based on their knowledge and performance, as opposed to just, are you tracking with the rest of your class? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's right, George. And I do think you're right that our system isn't really known for this kind of nimbleness or personalization. And I think now is the time where we could try to do better at that and give this, you know, try to use this opportunity to think about doing things a little bit different and serving students' individual needs better. And competency-based education is just one approach. And there are just a variety of examples across the country of schools that are doing this well. So it's not like you have to reinvent the boat on it either.
Now, this idea that necessity is the mother of all invention, and, you know, never waste the opportunity to use some kind of a crisis for moving forward right. In some way. What are the things that you have come across that educators have been doing across the state during this pandemic that you think, hey, that's a keeper? Let's continue to do that.
Absolutely. Well, there's some models, and, you know, we're seeing it out of some private schools, some of high-performing suburban districts and charter schools as well that are actually still providing pretty rigorous learning right now, even while school buildings are closed. They're mirroring the school day with teachers are doing live instruction during what would be the normal class periods. They're usually doing it over, some schools are doing it over 4 days, let's say, and then Fridays are one-on-one meetings, so students can check in with advisors or teachers on Friday and do their own work. So you're seeing just still having high expectations for kids, teacher check-ins, monitoring of progress on work, and still providing a little bit of live instruction. And so students can still have that kind of resemblance of a classroom. And I think some of those aspects are going really well. unfortunately not seeing that happen at a lot of the larger public school districts that are not really doing that level.
Now,
that degree of rigor.
Do you think they're not engaged in that level of rigor as a function of volume, size, or is it, and I've heard this before and this resonates with me, a socioeconomic piece. And what I mean by that is, look, my kids go to school in Douglas County. I live in Douglas County. We're a very affluent, good-looking county. I'm kidding. Very affluent county. My kids have all the Wi-Fi and computers and stuff they need to do what they need to do. My guess is that is not true across the entire metro area and probably even throughout some of the rural parts of the state. Is some of this inability or unwillingness to engage in that rigor a product of the lack of resources that exist elsewhere, or is it a different philosophical approach?
You're absolutely right. There is a large, and rightly so, concern about equity and access to technology and even internet. And I think that's right. I think school districts have been worried about, first and foremost, the health and safety of students. And that's great. I think that that was the first move that had to happen, within that first month that schools were closed. Students needed to be taken, make sure their basic needs were taken care of and make sure that they do have access to devices. If school districts could get them that's great. And then now we can move past that phase. And I think we're still seeing school districts struggle to kind of use the time that students have at home productively. And I think those gaps that are already present right now are going to get even bigger. And you're going to have our most vulnerable students falling further behind that they already were. And so school districts are really going to have to think about how to catch those students up, how to target funding, how to target resources to them next school year.
Well, let me ask you then, do you have some idea, and this isn't part of your report, so I'm catching you a little off guard here, but do you have some recommendations or idea on how they would do that? I mean, that's also a Ready Colorado thing, too, is to try to figure out the funding piece. But how do you provide those resources that are needed for this next generation of education that's now forced on this generation in an environment where maybe you don't have the tax base or you just don't have the funds to do it? What are the options there for schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to require a reprioritization of current funds. So we're just going to have to think about targeting the dollars to those students who need them most. I do think that there is, there's the stimulus funding from the feds. There's some other competitive grants that the federal government has released. One I found really interesting was a pot of money for, they're calling them micro grants, but they're basically stipends to families, direct to families.
Oh, interesting.
To use on any sort of tutoring services, any supplemental education services.
I like that.
And it could be public or private providers. Yeah. And so Colorado, the state, could apply for that grant. It could be between 12 and 15 million. So not a huge amount of money, but again, there's those types of resources out there. And then I think now is going to be a time for public and private partnerships to really ramp up to kind of round out what the school system can't do through after school programs, apprenticeships, work-based learning,
right,
summer learning. And I think those aspects are going to be huge in terms of meeting the needs of kids, especially, again, those kids who are most at risk of falling behind.
Some of that, too, by the way, requires in-person instruction, which I hope we get back to sooner rather than later. But in your old school district there of Cherry Creek, the superintendent, who's a wicked smart guy named Scott Siegfried, He just gave me a tour of this fantastic facility, again, not far from my office, that is one of those types of facilities where people go to do the hands-on learning, whether it's on the technology piece or, you're learning HVAC stuff or whatever. But it's for that idea that, man, maybe your next step after high school is a decision to go into something that's more certificate, licensed, professional-based immediately, as opposed to, hey, I'm going to go and do some more liberal arts educating before I move on. So I agree with you with that stuff right there. Listen, I could talk to you all day, Dr. Koner. Here's what I'd like to do in the future. If you ever come up with an answer to this, and that is, what in the world are we going to do with higher education after this pandemic? Don't answer it now. Don't ruin it now, because I know you're going to want to give it some thought, but I'd love to have you back on to talk about it. This is fascinating. Dr. Brenda DeConer from Common Sense Policy Roundtable, which you can find her report at commonsensepolicyroundtable.org. Any last words before we let you get back to your Saturday?
I think this is a really important issue for us to be considering right now. We're bailing out airlines, and we just need to think about how we're going to also try to bail out our education system, and not necessarily with more money, but just more maybe creativity.
I love that idea. Doctor, thank you so much for being on. Hey, listen, when we come back, And after that, we've got another guest too. But when we come back, we are going to hear from one of those trench fighting high school teachers that was just referenced during this interview. And we're going to get the in your face kind of approach to how do you teach a freaking foreign language to a high school student when you can't be in the same room with them? What are the challenges of doing this in this environment? That will be this week's installment of Get to Know Your Teen. My name is George Brockler. This is The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS.